Welcome back to Vandenberg Flash Focus, your source for fast and focused foreign policy analysis on breaking news around the world. I'm your new host, Sophie Singletary, and today I'm excited to be joined by Karine Hajjar, an opinion and editorial writer at the Boston Globe, covering all things from higher education to national elections. She's worked at National Review and at the Wall Street Journal's editorial board as the Fund for American Studies Joseph Rago Fellow. As an undergrad, she was the founding leader of the Conservative Coalition at Harvard, where she returned to just yesterday to cover the unfolding encampment in Harvard Yard. What Karine and I share is that we both graduated from Ivy League schools, Karine from Harvard in 2021 and myself from Princeton last spring. We reflect today on how our respective alma maters have strayed from their most basic value as educational institutions and evolved into indoctrination machines. As encampments against the State of Israel rage on college campuses across the U.S., rarely do we have the opportunity to sit down directly with someone who's seen and heard these students up close. Having visited the campuses of NYU, Columbia, and Harvard, Karine is here today to offer us an assessment of what she saw on the ground, what she perceives of this wave of anti-Israeli and anti-American sentiment, and what generally is causing the degradation of higher education. Karine, it's an absolute joy to welcome you to Flash Focus.
Thanks for having me on, Sophie. Glad to be here.
Glad you're with us. So to kick off here, just yesterday you were in Cambridge covering the chaos at Harvard as it unfolded. How would you describe the atmosphere there at Harvard, and how did that contrast with the earlier visits you took to the campuses of NYU and Columbia?
Well, it was certainly more sober than NYU and Columbia. Those campuses have just been having way bigger protests, at least in the last few days. I was at Harvard on a random day during reading period. So that means that a lot of students are studying for finals. They have a week gearing up until their exams. And the campus, when you walked in, it just felt like when I was a freshman, it was quiet. People were walking around. The yard is where the freshmen work. But then you walk past the first building in the yard and it opens up and there are 40 tents, all different colors. Students sitting down, chatting and wearing keffiyehs. John Harvard, the famous statue in the middle of the yard, is also wearing a keffiyeh. So it was, you know, you walk in and it feels normal, and all of a sudden, there's that scene. So it felt foreign and familiar all at once, but certainly more sober than NYU and Columbia have been. And I had a kind of a mixed review of opinions from the students that I met who are willing to chat with me. Some said that it was a disturbance, especially as they're studying for finals. Others said it doesn't really bother them much because it's right where the freshmen live, so they don't have to walk by it every day. So a lot of mixed reviews there.
You mentioned speaking to students on the side there, determining whether or not they found it a disturbance or so forth. I wonder, were you able to speak directly with any of the protesters? And if so, what did they have to say?
Well, I still haven't heard back from their apparent media contact. It's really hard to talk to people who are directly part of the movement. And this applies to NYU, Columbia, and now Harvard. I've seen that students who are protesting directly with these college groups are told not to speak to the press. They're told to cover their faces and be as anonymous as possible. And they're told to direct media to a media point person. And that's just been a little frustrating because a lot of times they won't get back to you. I noticed yesterday that somebody had pulled up my Twitter, which obviously has some of my thoughts on these protests, some of my articles linked. I could see it on their laptop when they said they were too busy to talk to me. So that's been a little frustrating because I think it's important, one, that their voice gets heard and they get to, you know, have a say in the very public display they are putting on in the college square in the middle of campus. They shouldn't be, if they're willing to be out there and camp out there, they should be willing to talk to media, even if it's a critical opinion writer. So it's also difficult because not all of these protests are created equal. Like I said, Harvard's was very subdued yesterday. I can't speak for every single day, but it looked like students were chilling as if it was a sunny day out in the yard, just laying on the grass. Obviously, there are disparaging signs, which could make any pro-Israel Jewish student feel uncomfortable, but it was nothing like the shoving that I saw outside of Columbia last week.
You've written about the schism at these protests between students who are personally connected to the region and those for whom the war has instead become the, quote, flavor of the month activist cause, in your words, which I loved. For these students in the second bucket who make up the bulk of these protesters, at least from what I've observed, why do you think they've chosen this particular cause? And have colleges encouraged this kind of thinking, this black and white victim versus oppressor thinking?
Yeah, and I want to start off by saying that there are definitely protesters who are either Palestinian or just regular protesters who are truly sympathetic to the issue. My problem is with, as you say, the bulk of these protesters who, at least through the interviews, the sampling that I had when I was at the NYU protest in Washington Square Park, most of them don't even know what they're protesting for. And, you know, you go through college learning that we both graduated recently. I graduated in 2021 from Harvard. You go through, especially in the social sciences, learning that there is this broad framework to the arc of modern history that is oppressor versus oppressed. And states like Israel are oppressors, these prosperous states who have gone in and, again, another word that is a buzzword on campus is colonized. So have colonized these areas and they're nothing but evil. And that is black and white. So a lot of these students think in that framework, they think in a very binary way, and it's hard to sit down with them and reason about how complicated the Middle East is. And I think that, you know, I witnessed a conversation between an Israeli student who was walking through the park and a Palestinian student, and they were talking about both of their mutual pain from the conflict. Obviously, Israelis have suffered a lot. Many people know folks who were in these attacks that happened on October 7th. They have to witness this horrific video footage of things that could have happened to them. It's emotional for anyone. And I think it should be easy to relate to that feeling, as it should be easy to relate to the suffering of Gazans. I mean, they're going through horrible trials right now. This is tragic any way you look at it for them. So the fact that they could talk about mutual pain and acknowledge mutual pain was a really human moment. On the outside, though, there was a mob circling them of largely American students, is my guess, who could not rationalize that an Israeli would feel pain from this conflict. And I think that's really the poison of the framework that colleges are placing on students, that at this point they can't even empathize with both sides of a conflict that is very painful. And they cannot empathize with their pro-Israel Jewish classmates. And I think that's really a failure of higher education right now.
And disturbingly, across a lot of these campuses, we've seen support generated for these student encampments from various parties, whether it be complicit leadership from the presidents of the universities, some level of coordination across schools, and most disturbingly, I think, is support from the faculty and professors of the colleges. And I'm wondering if you can speak to why we're seeing this concrete material support from the very professors we've, maybe naively so, trusted to educate students, not encourage their bigotry.
You know, yesterday I saw a tent in Harvard Yard that had a big proud sign that said faculty, and it was something like faculty here in the encampment. And I think that, you know, it's no secret that there are a lot of faculty members who are sympathetic to the pro-Palestine movement, and more than that, are sympathetic to the anti-Israel movement. I think it's important to distinguish those two. The people that fall into the latter camp, obviously they're going to be out there with these students cheering on this movement, which is getting a ton of media attention. It fits their narrative and it fits their syllabus. So there are faculty on campus who have been teaching anti-Israel viewpoints for as long as they've been there. And I think a really great example at Columbia is Joseph Massad, who called the October 7th attack awesome. So you have that group of faculty who are just in favor of this bloody uprising. I think you also have faculty who fit into the intersectionality narrative of all of this, where you see a lot of signs that are Gaza is fill in the blank. So I've seen Gaza is climate justice, Gaza is BLM, Gaza is all of these basically progressive priorities. They're seen in this intersectional framework. And as we know, a lot of folks on campus lean left have progressive agendas. And so it's no surprise that when issues pop up that fit that framework or are adjacent to that framework, they're going to come out and support each other.
And you mentioned earlier you graduated Harvard class of 2021. Glad to be speaking with a fellow Gen Zer, or not. Anyway, I was wondering, while you were on campus, did you see bubbling of this anti-Israeli, anti-Americanism sentiment emerging? At least in my experience at Princeton, I recall the shift being marked by the COVID year and the social justice summer that followed in 2020, kind of tilting us towards this hyperfixation on social justice advocacy at schools, which was, of course, propped up by a bloated DEI bureaucracy on these campuses. And I'm wondering, do you associate what you're seeing today with that time period, that kind of COVID social justice summer? And if not, what do you think marked this shift among college students towards this anarchy and form of protest disguised as advocacy?
I think that the common thread through all of this is that colleges are selecting for activists now. And I'm sure, like, when you were applying to college, just like when I was applying to college, all of a sudden there was always emphasis on showing leadership, but all of a sudden it felt like there was emphasis on showing social justice activism. And when you got on campus, and there were a bunch of activists. I'm not speaking for all students. I think it's important for, you know, your listeners, and I try to emphasize this with my readers as well, to remember that this is a very vocal minority on campus. But the fact that they're able to be a minority that is that vocal and steers the narrative that much is really telling. I think that this is a quality that colleges look for and celebrate. As for where the anti-Israel sentiment fits in the ebb and flow of Vogue progressive causes, I mean, it's always been bubbling at colleges. It's always been simmering there. So to your question about the shift to the anti-Israel sentiment on campus, I think it's always been there. We mentioned Joseph Mossad. There have been members of faculty who have forwarded this thinking, and even when it's been very hateful, are allowed to continue teaching their classes, even when it's very controversial on campus. I think that this has popped up as the big issue of the moment. But as you mentioned, there have been various issues. There was the social justice summer of 2020, as you mentioned. There was COVID. These were all things that happened when I was on campus too, and they all fit very neatly into the oppressor-oppressed framework. So I think this really comes back to the way that colleges are teaching their students to think about the world. And certainly the anti-Israel stuff is gaining a lot of momentum right now, but I'm sure that next year or the year after, there's going to be another cause that fits into this framework, unless colleges start to teach their students to have better dialogue and better discourse between groups affected by these issues. Right now on campus, it's one group can be the victim and that's it. It's important for students, like the story I mentioned earlier that happened at Washington Square Park, it's important for students to acknowledge common humanity on both sides and to go from there instead of looking at the world black and white.
Great. And to wrap us up here, despite all of the data, of course, unfolding in real time, the latest that I saw was that an estimated 1,100 people at 31 college campuses have been arrested at these pro-Palestinian Hamas-sympathizing protests and encampments. And after last night's clearing out of Hamilton Hall on the campus of Columbia by NYPD, I'm wondering, where do you think we go from here? And from what you've witnessed on campus, will these arrests, in your opinion, deter or further embolden these students? Or would disciplinary threats such as the University of Florida threatening to ban students from campus for 3 years work better? Or generally, are these students a lost cause?
It's a question that I'm really mulling over right now and struggling with, especially because I think listeners should recall that graduation is coming up. And you have a lot of these encampments in the heart of campus. So this is kind of like the do or die moment for colleges and protesters. So it's going to be really interesting to see whether people back down, step up, what that's going to look like. I think that places like Columbia, students have shown that they're willing to do anything to protest, including be disruptive, make students feel unsafe. I saw a man in a kippah get shoved when I was outside the Columbia protest the other day. This was outside the main gate. Certainly there were students present, outsiders as well. But I mean, last night was kind of do or die moment for the college, where they realized we can't let students storm and take over a building. NYPD had to get involved. And we were chatting about a story earlier before you started recording, just chuckling about the fact that students were complaining that on their Instagrams that how dare the NYPD break a window and come in? And the students broke windows to get into the building a couple days prior. So I think that just shows that there are some students who are really willing to go the distance on this. And going back to my comments on activism, I think part of this, again, this is, I'm not talking about all students. I'm talking about like the really loud activists who are leading these crowds, but they probably applied to these colleges and stood out because they wanted to be social justice warriors. And now they are getting expelled or suspended because of their activism. Maybe that's not such a bad thing for them. Maybe that's what they want, or maybe that's, you know, if they're okay with that, then they have to be okay with that. But there's still a lot of students who I think are wrapped up with these protests right now who are thinking, wow, do I really want to lose my Ivy League degree? I certainly think that a lot of nerdy Harvard students that I went to school with that might have been very zealous in their progressive ideas would probably be backing up right now and saying, do I really need to go the distance on this? Do I really want to lose my degree? Which could help me make more change in the future. So I certainly hope that students start to reflect, but we've seen the videos of the folks storming the halls. We've seen the videos of the student like Kimani James, who's leading these Columbia protests, who said he's comfortable killing Zionists and doubled down on it. Some of them are just so wrapped up in the fervor of this that they're not willing to pause and really think critically. And isn't that what we're supposed to do on campus? So I think that for some of these students, it just shows a failure of the admissions process to think critically about the type of students that they're letting onto campuses that are supposed to be inquisitive, inclusive, curious spaces.
Well, Kareen, thank you so much. Thank you for your continued live time coverage of this and all matters, all campuses. And thank you especially for joining us today on Flash Focus.
Thanks for having me on. This is great.
And thank you all for listening. Until next time, I'm your host, Sophie Singletary, and this is Vandenberg Flash Focus.